happy day.
Oh, happy day.
When Jesus wore.
When Jesus wore.
Oh, when he wore.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, sharing a lot of information how we can live a longer and happier and healthier life today. Plus, after we do health and nutrition, some additional insights on the environment. I have 10 different stories I'm going to share, a paragraph on each, but at least enough to let you know that many of the commentaries and insightful discussions that we have had over the past, let's say, 10 years, since I began to look at what was the end of this particular era and how feedback loops are now in an impossible situation to stop. No matter what we do at this moment, many of the tipping points have tipped. In fact, just last week I had Professor Emeritus of Environmental Sciences and a leading climatologist, Professor Guy McPherson, on. Some people were confused by what he said. What was his message? I'll share that message again today because others are confirming it. He said that within a year of having even 2 to 3 weeks of an ocean in the Arctic that is free of ice, it would start increasing the temperature to where grains would no longer be able to be easily grown in North America. That's going to impact a lot of people around the world that depend upon us shipping them grains. Anyhow, a lot more on the environment, plus 5 reasons Trump's infrastructure plan is bad for everyone and the planet. Oh, but it's very good for those who are smart enough to know how to bilk the system. A woman had a simple procedure done, medical procedure. It was successful. She was given a short-term use of a medication to an opiate. And then her doctor said, "How you doing?" She said, "I'm off everything, feeling great." He said, "Well, let's just do just a follow-up urine test, a simple urine test." She did. Then she got the bill. How much do you think they charged her just to examine to see if her body was free of those opiates? Simple test. I'll tell you in a moment. Also, millions of Americans are among the poorest people on the planet. Paul Burkert from Alternet tells us why. And they're doing something unique in the United Kingdom. That's Great Britain. Something that some people have advocated we do in the United States. I'm opposed to it. Wealthy are getting their own private police force who then are able to make arrests. These are private police and protect their house, neighborhood. Well, what if you don't pay for that? Would you then be susceptible? Yeah. It's a bad idea. They tried this with insurance, fire insurance. And so a fire truck actually in the United States, it was either in Kentucky or Tennessee, person's house caught on fire. They called the fire department. The fire department came out. The fire truck was there. But then they found the man didn't have his insurance up to date or the insurance covered by that fire department. So they did not put out the fire and the man's house burned to the ground. Hard to believe. True story. So I'll get into that. And from our audio file today, is Rachel Maddow dangerous to journalism? Abby Martin is going to give you her input on that. Then the millennials. Some of them, not all, are the dumbest generation in history. and also an inspector general of the Defense Department discovered $300 million going to Afghanistan to ghosts, meaning people who did not exist. It was not stopped. It had been going on for a long time. That's just $300 million in that one group they investigated. Billions and billions of our dollars that were given to crooks. And that was just the tip of the iceberg. That's one of the reasons that I'm very concerned about where our money goes. But we always start with the latest on health and healing. And this is from an institute of research in Spain, published in the Journal of Agriculture and Food Chemistry. They talk about wine and the polyphenols in wine and how those the bacteria in your body that cause cavities and gum disease can be killed by drinking wine. And so that means quite simply that sipping red wine is good for your colon and good for your heart, that we already know. But now we know that it's also good for the killing off the bacteria in your mouth. Traditionally, some health benefits of polyphenols have been attributed to the fact that these compounds are antioxidants, meaning they likely protect the body from harm caused by free radicals. However, recent work indicates polyphenols might also promote health by actively interacting with the good bacteria in your gut. That makes sense because plants and fruits produce polyphenols to ward off infection by harmful bacteria and other pathogens. And so the scientists in this study just wanted to test it. So they tested whether wine and grape polyphenols would also protect teeth and gums and how this would work on a molecular level. And the researchers checked out the effect of two red wine polyphenols that are commercially available. And one of those is grape seed extract, and the other is red wine extract. And they looked at how these would impact the bacteria that stick to your teeth, especially overnight, and gums, and cause dental plaque and cavities and periodontal disease. And they found that it made a difference. It was able to, having this, in effect, oral probiotic, the polyphenols were even better at fending off pathogenic bacteria. So, here's the takeaway message. Red wine is made from grapes, fermented grapes. The amount of the healing polyphenols in red wine is about 1/50th of what you would get if you drank grape juice or ate the grapes with the grape seed and the grape skin. And the greatest concentration is if you just took 100 milligrams of resveratrol or grape seed extract. So if you want to have healthier gums, healthier teeth, less disease, less cavities, have some grape juice or eat some grapes each day. And then to a lesser degree, but still significant, red wine. So I would certainly look at the grapes first and the grape juice. I remember a man coming into my office down on Broadway where I was for a long time, for decades. Wonderful space. It was, many of you were there. Thousands came there. That's where I saw people, and we had our lecture room. And it was a three-story building, about 110 years old. It had been a theater, so it had this huge ceiling, a great room, 4,000 square feet. And it was just unlike any other office that you could imagine. But one day, a gentleman came in, and he had end-stage heart disease. He had a cardiomyopathy. He had a diseased liver and diseased kidney. He was a lawyer. He could not understand why he was in failing health, nor could his cardiologist. So we went through his diet. His diet was not ideal, but it wasn't a bad diet. Compared to the average American diet, it was substantially better. He did eat a lot of fruits and vegetables. He didn't eat red meat, but he did eat chicken, and it wasn't hormone-free and free-range. and he ate farmed fish like tilapia and shrimp and farmed salmon, not good at all, filled with parasites and chemicals. And I'm looking at the diet, and I said, well, there's nothing in your diet that I can see that would have caused three major life-threatening illnesses, you know, your kidneys, your liver, and your heart. There must be something else. He said, no, that's it. That's all I eat. No sugars, no refined carbohydrate. What do you drink? He said, well, I have fresh orange juice in the morning, and sometimes in the afternoon I'll have apple juice. Do you drink coffee? No, I don't drink coffee. Water? Yeah, I drink water. There's something you're not telling me. Well, no, that's it. I mean, outside of, you know, every night, I have two glasses of alcohol. You have alcohol? What kind? Well, I like bourbon. And my cardiologist said that two glasses of alcohol is good for me. What size glass do you have? I have about around 6 ounces. You have 12 ounces of 80-proof alcohol a night, and your cardiologist thinks that's a good idea? Yeah, he said, all the science is nice. No, that's not true. I went to France to see what the French paradox was. I wanted to go to the countryside, which I did, in the cities and the suburbs. I wanted to study their health, and I found that it had nothing to do with alcohol. It had to do with them eating grapes and drinking red wine and sulfate-free wine, wines they made themselves. I said, so that suddenly got commingled, that actual life experience, with alcohol. And therefore, no one looked at the actual scientific literature to show that it wasn't alcohol. Alcohol is destructive. I wrote a book on alcohol. I've written articles on alcohol and how much it damages, how many millions of kidney cells, brain cells, and heart cells are destroyed with each drink. So you've been doing this for how long? About 3 years. I said, well, there's the cause of your liver disease, kidney disease, and your heart disease. He was just flabbergasted. He was also very angry at his cardiologist. So I gave him some studies from our archive showing how damaging one single glass of alcohol is, how many cells. It kills over 1 million cells in each organ. And he wasn't aware of that. Well, we got him off all the alcohol, and then I got him on a protocol for his heart, for his liver, and his kidneys, and lo and behold, he reversed all three diseases. Now, every single study right now coming out shows that alcohol is destructive. It's the leading cause of dementia. And that reminds me of another meeting I had. This goes back about 6 years ago. And a woman who herself was going through some health crisis brought her parents in. And her parents did not have a bad diet. Once again, it wasn't good. But she was concerned that her mother was showing some memory problems. And her father was having some problems as well. I put them on a good protocol. But when I told them they couldn't have any alcohol, they said, well, no, every afternoon after we golf, we have a martini. I mean, it's just tradition. I said, well, your tradition's causing your liver and your brain to be destroyed. And I gave an example how the alcohol will break the dendrites in the brain. Visualize a telephone pole with a line that carries your signal going from telephone pole to telephone pole. That's when that line is snapped, and alcohol snaps that line. And chemicals can snap that line, and stress can snap that line, then messages can't go from point A to point B easily. I said, you've got to rebuild it. You've got to stop it and then rebuild it. Yes, we can rebuild it. There are things we know now that can help that brain. That's how I gave a protocol, but they said they weren't going to do it. And after they left, about an hour or two later, the woman called back and said, I'm sorry, my parents are just really obstinate. I said, well, if they don't make these changes, you could reasonably expect within the next 2 to 3 years your mom to be in full-scale dementia and your father shortly thereafter. That's exactly what happened. The mother is now in a assisted living center, cannot take care of herself, doesn't recognize her daughter, and that goes for the father as well. I can't tell you how heartbreaking it is to see people who make wrong choices and expect a good outcome. Just understand that's how the body works. This is the Institute of Mental Health Policy, and it's published in the Lancet Public Health Journal. Quote, alcohol use disorders are the most important preventable risk factors for the onset of all types of dementia, especially early onset dementia. This is according to a new study of over 1 million adults diagnosed with dementia in France. This study looked specifically at the effect of alcohol use disorders and included people who had been diagnosed with mental and behavioral disorders or chronic disease that were attributable to chronic harmful use of alcohol. And it goes right into talking about how alcohol causes massive inflammation in your brain. So, and that leads to dementia. And then dementia can start around, it depends upon how much alcohol you consume, how regularly. We're not talking about getting drunk, just regular social drinking. It can start in your 40s. So that's a problem. So here is the one possible piece of the puzzle to stop dementia and Alzheimer's and Parkinson's. Stop all alcohol. None at all. Good news from the University of Birmingham, that's in the United Kingdom. Exercising more reduces the risk of diabetes and could save 7 million fewer diabetic patients just in China, Hong Kong, Taiwan alone. So researchers found that higher levels of leisure time physical activity, like power walking, jogging, running, and biking, are linked to a lower risk of diabetes in individuals. That was an 18-year study published in the British Journal of Sports Medicine. Also, depression is now shown to be linked to a reduced level of arginine, A-R-G-I-N-I-N-E. That's an amino acid. This is from the University of Eastern Finland. So people suffering from major depression have reduced arginine levels. That's a new study. Now, arginine is inexpensive, and it is used to produce nitric oxide. And nitric oxide, in turn, is a nervous system and immune defense mediator, and it also plays a role in vascular regulation. Now, arginine is not difficult to get, but we have to make ourselves aware that we need it, and this is published in the Journal of Affective Disorders. So my suggestion is, if you suffer from depression, go to a health food store and pick up a bottle of arginine and take that twice a day. And that can make a difference. Oh, and by the way, from the Max Planck Institute for Human Cognitive and Brain Sciences in Germany, they talk about how exercise and music helps us feel less pain. Now, pain is essential for survival. However, it could also slow the progress of rehabilitation, or in its chronic form, as we know, becomes a distinct disorder. How strongly we feel it, among other factors, depends upon our individual pain threshold. So what they found at this research is when you are trying to get yourself fit, you increase your pain threshold. Hence, it makes you less sensitive towards physical discomfort. And so music and working out together, they call it Jymin, J-Y-M-M-I-N. And the two together, music and working out, creates a whole new way of dealing with pain in the body. And so that's just terrific. And by the way, finally, from the British Journal of Medicine, just a few minutes of light intensity exercise is linked to a lower death risk in men. This is published in the British Journal of Sports Medicine. I'm not talking about heavy exercise. I'm not talking about long exercise. I'm talking about 10 minutes. 10 minutes of physical activity, including light intensity, and you can live a longer life. figure about 150 minutes a week would really be terrific for you. And 150 minutes a week is not a lot of time. So you live a longer life, do some exercise. I'm Gary Knoll. That's the latest on health and healing. Back in a moment. We've got a lot more to share. Please stay with us. Nice to have you with us, everyone. Medical cannabis is superior to opiates for chronic pain. This is according to a new study as referenced in GreenMedInfo. Sarah Gies, quote, sufferers of chronic pain have been faced with a perilous decision, risk of crippling addiction to opiates, or find a way to live with the pain. A new clinical study has focused on medical cannabis as an alternative to opiates, and the results may be a turning point towards a safe plant-based option for easing pain. The new study published in the European Journal of Internal Medicine represents hope for millions of sufferers of chronic pain. Researchers at the Cannabis Clinical Research Institute at the Soroka University Medical Center and Ben-Gurion University in the Negev found that the medical cannabis can significantly reduced chronic pain without any adverse effects, particularly among adults. And the use of cannabis, medical marijuana, was found to be both safe and effective for elderly patients experiencing pain between or because of another medical condition, such as cancer, multiple sclerosis, Parkinson's, Crohn's disease, ulcerative colitis, and post-traumatic stress disorder. Wow, that is good information. And so use that as you can. Now, I want to do a few things on the environment today because this is the latest from Counterpunch from Ron Hunziker. There is no time left, is titled the article. Quote, imagine a scenario with no temperature difference between the equator and the North Pole. That was 12 million years ago when there was no ice at either pole. In that context, according to Professor James Anderson of Harvard University, carbon in the atmosphere today is the same as 12 million years ago. The evidence is found in the record. It's irrefutable, meaning today's big meltdown has only just started. And we've got 5 years to fix it or endure Zonzo world. That's one big pill to swallow. That scenario comes by way of interpretation of a speech delivered by Professor Anderson at the University of Chicago just a few weeks ago when he received the Benton Medal for Distinguished Public Service, in part for his groundbreaking research that led to the Montreal Protocol to mitigate ozone layer. So here's another person saying we've got 5 years. He is being optimistic. This is from EcoWatch, plastic in all sizes found everywhere in the once pristine European Arctic. Quote, a disturbing amount of plastic is building up in the once pristine European Arctic. According to a study from the Norwegian Polar Institute, quote, plastics of all sizes can be found throughout the Norwegian Arctic and in the island area of the archipelago between Norway's mainland and the North Pole. And that's also one of the Earth's northernmost inhabited areas. The researchers estimated that in nearly 194 trash objects, mostly plastic, can be found per square kilometer in the region and weighs a total of 97,000 tons. Whoa. So what this means in lay language is that there's all kinds of plastic, including microplastics, that all kinds of animals and fish, mammals, are consuming. And there's a bunch of it up there. And it's not good. Also, A new map reveals which countries are most likely to survive climate change. This is Fran Whitaker Wood from Alternet. Quote, we should all flee to Northern Europe to live out our final days. Quote, climate change is one of the most pressing crises facing humanity, caused by an immense and continual buildup of carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases in our atmosphere as a result of human activity. Climate change is already causing a series of alarming environmental events. Once snowy landscapes are slowly melting away to leave an uninhabitable and barren wilderness. Rising sea temperatures are killing thousands of miles of coral reef and marine life, while freak weather events are becoming more common and costing billions of dollars. These serve as a worrying indication of the catastrophic effect climate change could have on our planet in the future, if nothing is done to tackle it. Well, nothing's being done. And then it goes on, quote, which country is the most likely to survive climate change? The answer, Norway. Thanks to its low vulnerability score and high readiness score, the nation's Nordic neighbors also fared very well. Finland, Sweden, Denmark, and Iceland. And those are your top ones. And interestingly, the United Kingdom and the United States did not even make the top 10. They ranked 12th in the United States, 15th of nations most likely to be able to survive. And poor China, whoa, most populous country in the world, you're down at 59th. You're toast. You're dead. You're gone. In the future, you waited too long to make the changes. Not very smart. And now you and your people, well, not you, the billionaires will move around, but the other persons won't be able to. Despite arguably being the world's biggest contributor towards climate change, emitting a mass of 9,040 metric tons of CO2 into the atmosphere every year, the country is somewhat sensitive to the effects of a warming planet, you think? And then who's the ones most likely to really get just destroyed? They have no chance. None. Nothing anybody can do. They're dead. As I'm talking about the land, the people can migrate. We're talking about sub-Saharan Africa. They're the last ones in this whole list. Somalia being the country with the least likely to survive climate change, but also Chad, Eritrea, Central African Republic, Democratic Republic of the Congo, also all bad. But then you got to look at all the places in the Middle East. They're all toast. Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates, Qatar, Kuwait, Jordan, Oman. Sand to sand. Also talking about sand, from Alexander Popescu, demand for sand is leading to a global ecological crisis. Demand for sand has risen rapidly in recent decades, leading to an overexploitation in some areas. The resource is particularly vulnerable to illegal mining, and extraction of sand can make local communities more vulnerable to storm surges, destroy wildlife habitat, agricultural land, and lead to a loss of groundwater resources. And every day, miners moved 6,000 truckloads of sand, with 20 tons each truck, just from one beachfront and 16 river basins in the Tamil Nadu in India. And here's what it means. Every time you build a highway, a building, you need sand. Sand has come from someplace, so they go out and they mine it, and that ends up adversely affecting the area where it's being taken. I remember when I lived in South Beach for about 16 years, right on Ocean Drive, and it was a wonderful experience. Every morning I'd go out at 4 o'clock and I'd go for a 10-mile run on the beach. It was quiet. I rarely saw another human being going out or coming back, 5 miles out, 5 miles back. But I did see something every single morning. I would see bulldozers taking boatloads of sand and smoothing it into the beach. I spoke with the people many times, and then I followed that chain up to find out that the water at night is coming in at a high tide and taking sand back out. And because people come to Miami Beach or South Beach to be on the beach, it's really beautiful, it was understandable. I didn't know how much they were losing. And they're losing a tremendous amount. And they no longer have sand anywhere in the United States to take. So they have to go. They were going to the Bahamas and they ran out of sand. Now they're having to go to other places to get the sand to bring in. It's one of those little behind-the-scenes things that you'd never know. So it's not sustainable. It's just I was there early enough before anyone went to the beach to see that that beach was disappearing every night, much of it, and they were just replenishing it. Also, from Eric Levitz, the New York Magazine, the White House's failure in Puerto Rico was even worse than we knew. I'll just quote a couple paragraphs. In the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina, Congress launched a bipartisan investigation into how the Bush administration's response had fallen so fatally short. That probe found, among other things, that the Federal Emergency Management, FEMA, agency had neglected to line up potential contractors in preparation for a major natural disaster, an oversight that led FEMA to rely on wasteful, fraudulent, and inefficient partners once the levees broke. Now some on Capitol Hill are beginning to suspect that FEMA made the same error under Trump in the run-up to last year's devastating hurricane season. Cause for such concerns isn't hard to find. In November, the Associated Press revealed that the agency paid a single firm $30 million for emergency tarps and plastic sheeting. None of it was ever delivered. And on Tuesday, the New York Times reported that FEMA handed off responsibility for providing Puerto Ricans with food to a Tiffany Brown in Atlanta, an entrepreneur with no experience in large-scale disaster relief, and at least five canceled government contracts in her past. The agency gave her $156 million. She was supposed to deliver 30 million meals to hungry Puerto Ricans. She didn't know how to do it. She hired a wedding caterer in Atlanta with a staff of 11 to freeze-dry wild mushrooms and rice, chicken and rice, and vegetable soup. She found a nonprofit in Texas to ship the food. And so she was given $156 million. She was supposed to deliver 30 million meals. She delivered 50,000, and they couldn't be used because they all came in separate pouches. And you're supposed to send them all in one pouch. It could be heat, self-heating meals. So everything the government does, it does wrong. What screw-ups? Just never ends. Now, if you really wanted to help the people of Puerto Rico, and they deserve help, they're good people. First, forgive their debt. That's right off the bat. Secondly, give them locally, not with outside contractors, people who are known and established within the community, who get community support, and have them build solar generator and solar generator farms all over the island. This way, they don't run out of electricity in the future. And you can also have protector walls around them, concrete walls that are, let's say, 15 foot high. So during the daytime, they collect all the energy and store it in massive batteries. And then they have it. So if a storm came, the storm, another hurricane, wouldn't rip them up. The walls would cause a shear effect, and since these are low to the ground. Separately, have backup facilities where you could have universal phones so that people on the island could talk with everyone else on the island, backup electrical generators. In other words, everything you would normally need after a storm, have there in advance on all 6 points on the island, including land movers and cherry pickers. Trees could be took off the road with these in every one of those areas. In effect, you have all this. Then have desalinization water to the springs, and you have springs in Puerto Rico, so you have giant desalinization. So if anything happens and the regular commercial water is cut off, you have your backup spring water that can be fed right into those same people's systems. Why is it with all the scientists and the engineers, no one ever thinks of this stuff? Why not? Bureaucrats, technocrats, not very bright people. Also, finally, from our environmental segment today, this is two studies, one by Tim Radford, Climate News. East Antarctica ice sheet may spell trouble. The East Antarctica ice sheet could release sea levels far more than anyone thought. And there's no way of knowing the worst until way in the future. So what he's saying is it's melting faster than any mathematical model had predicted. And then we have this from Oil Change International, from Andy Rawell. Welcome to the new Arctic, the region as we once knew it is no more. For many people in the Northern Hemisphere who celebrate Christmas, the iconic image is one of snow or of Santa Claus driving a sleigh through the snow driven by reindeer. Depending upon which version of the Santa Claus story you read, his home is in the Arctic, the North Pole. No more. And then it talks about the old Arctic, the one that was kept with ice, and then the new Arctic. And depending upon how fast it's melting very fast, the predictions of Guy McPherson are coming true, meaning that within the next year, even possibly this summer, when the Arctic goes completely ice-free, you're going to see the beginning of the heat buildup, methane release, more heat because of the methane release, and the beginning of a cycle that cannot be stopped. You can have your politics, you can have your ideology, you can have your denialism, avoidance, hubris. It is irrelevant. This is happening. And that means that large sections that depend upon growing food year-round will not be able to do that. That means other areas will have to grow the food. And where you don't have the food, more likely than not, you're going to have severe drought, in which case you're not going to have water. How many people are going to be affected in North America alone? Probably upwards of 60 million. 60 million people in the United States adversely affected. We're talking about within 3 to 5 years. If it continues, as Guy McPherson predicts, within 9 years from now, at least 1/5 of the Earth will not be able to grow enough to feed the inhabitants living there. You'll have massive starvation, food riots, and wars. So it's coming, like it or not. I'm Gary Noll. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Nice to have you with us, everyone. I'm going to go to some other issues in a moment, but I want to offer you a special for those of you who have used the products I've created. I created what could be one of the single most important to use every day. I use it every day. In fact, I make sure I use it. It's called Cardio Stuff. What's in Cardio Stuff that makes it so special? I start off with organic oatmeal and then brown rice and then an oat bran, red wine extract, flaxseed cold pressed, sunflower lecithin, papaya, blackberries, bananas, hawthorn berries, grape seed extract, ginkgo biloba, Panax ginseng, cayenne, apples, cacao, which is your chocolate, green tea, decaffeinated, blueberries, pomegranate, almonds, vitamin C, turmeric with their curcumin, vitamin E, reishi mushrooms, coenzyme Q10, quercetin, resveratrol, and I sweeten it with stevia. It also has magnesium citrate and potassium citrate and organic inulin, I-N-U-L-I-N, and it has a chocolate flavor. It's only 62 calories. It even has protein in there, though that wasn't its intent. It has some fiber as well. This is just one of the single most important things. There's a lot of things you don't have to worry about consuming. This is one that you should be concerned about consuming. I won't say more than that. Why in the world would you want or need to consume something called Cardio Stuff? Let me think. cardio stuff. What possibly could that be doing to your body? I care about your health. I hope you care as much as I care about your health. That's why I take the time and the energy to create something that's original, new. Nowhere else on the planet does anyone have anything like this. They will in time. They always copy my work. That's fine. It's a form of flattery. I want you to have cardio stuff. We've made it the best it could possibly be made. It's normally $99. Today it's $64.99. That's it. So if you want to get your cardio stuff, I'm going to give you a number. 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. Call and get cardio stuff. It is important. It's worth it. Also today, I'm going to have the final offer, because I'm discontinuing one product, called Women's Stuff. The only reason I'm discontinuing, because I made men's stuff and women's stuff together. Men's stuff is very popular. Women's stuff, for some reason, people didn't want. They should. It is simply the finest powder of its kind that you could put into your body. It's just one of those unique phenomena where men's stuff, phenomenal. Women's stuff, people kind of say, well, no. I only have 30 bottles left, then it won't be here anymore. It's just about someone wants it or they don't. I make the best I can. If you want women's stuff, you're getting it. I think it's like 70% off. It's some outrageous amount. I don't have the exact figures. I think it's either $29 or $39, normally 100 some bucks, and you're getting it for discount. You can call that same number, 877-627-5065, but there's only 30 bottles left. When it's gone, it's gone. I also want to mention that I'm going to be having a telephone conference call, so anywhere in the world you can join in on this coming Sunday at 7 p.m. And it's for people who are interested in being a part of an intentional community. Now, what's an intentional community? It's a community where people come together and where they have their own ideas, their own projects, but they share some things in common. They have their own, you know, private apartments, but you share your meals together. And you're in the presence of people who have synergistically very common ideas about life. So you're not in arguments and fights. It's not for people who just want to hang out someplace. Everyone who comes is expected to have their own project, must have their own project. And there's going to be an artisan's village where glass blowing and pottery and weaving, and there's going to be agriculture and hydroponics, all kinds of wonderful things going on in a beautiful, sustainable environment, one that was selected based upon unlimited water, clean water, quality soil, and not going to be hit with all the variations of the weather that's impacting other people with hurricanes and tornadoes and earthquakes, etc. So if you want to be in on the conversation to learn more, you're going to do this. Call this number, 646-926-5422, 646-926-5422. It's my main office number. And just give your name and phone number and email address, and you'll be given a number to call. Also, you can go to prnstudio@gmail.com, prnstudio@gmail.com, and we will email you back tomorrow the information on Sunday night's conference call where I can answer all your questions. I'd like to welcome all of you right now. I'm Gary Nall. We're going to go over and say hello to Richard Gale, who is standing by. He is one of our scholars in residence and executive producer of this program. And we encourage people to write in their suggestions, their challenges, their questions. And they do. And Richard is here to address one of the people who was thoughtful enough, and we appreciate it, to write in some concerns, and we're going to address those concerns now. Hi, Richard.
Hi, Gary. Good afternoon. Yeah, we received it was a very, very thoughtful email from a he was a South African man, but who has spent a lot of time in Israel, and he was kind of critiquing our our stance regarding Israel, and in particular the BDS movement. So in the BDS movement, if listeners don't know, that stands for boycott, divestment, and sanctions. So this is an international effort right now to put economic pressure on the Israeli government to encourage foreign corporations and companies that are engaged in whether the construction or the export of supplies dealing with the settlements and the expansion of the Israeli land into the West Bank and into Gaza, to encourage investors to divest their interest from them. So one of the questions that kind of came up with this man was that this BDS movement is, in fact, hurting and injuring the employment of the Palestinians themselves. And there's probably some truth to that. I mean, obviously, if any kind of a sanction is going to or economic pressure is going to have an effect on all members of a society. But one of the other comments that was made was that Israel had given Gaza over as to the Palestinians as a gesture of peace and goodwill. And I'd like to challenge this a little bit. Unless there's something else you want to go through, Gary, but I think this is a really an important one, because it goes back into some history. And I think the question is, and we can't really answer that, but was it the intention of Gaza all along being like a holding tank for the deportation of Palestinians from greater Israel into this, what's now being seen by international human rights organizations and governments all around the world as pretty much as just an open-air camp, and apartheid. So when we look back at, I mean, for sure, we have to say that Israel owns Gaza. And so when we speak about a two-state solution, the international community or the nations and the United Nations recognizes Gaza being belonging to Israel. Israel maintains complete control over Gaza's and the life of its citizens. It controls Gaza's airspace. It controls the maritime space and off the coast. It controls 6 of the 7 land crossings for entering Gaza. There's nothing that prevents Israel from entering Gaza militarily. Gaza depends completely on Israel for water, for electricity, its telecommunications, and all the other utilities. So, it is basically the lives of the Gazans are completely at the mercy of Israel. When we look back even further in history, Gaza used to be under the control of Egypt. It was during the Israel-Egypt Armistice Agreement in 1949, when just immediately following the 1948 war, when the borders of Gaza were set, and all Palestinian government was recognized by Egypt and by the Arab League at that time. It did not revert over to Israel until after the Six-Day War in 1967. So people could even question the legitimacy of that, too, whether it's theft or not. The criticisms towards Hamas, we seem to forget that Hamas was a creation of the Israeli intelligence. Hamas was just originally a very small fringe organization, a Palestinian organization that the Israeli intelligence and government saw as being a useful tool for kind of the breakup of the Palestinians' allegiance to Arafat's PLO. And so they did support them, and, what can you say? It backfired, right? Hamas, when they were able to get so much support and recognition by Palestinians, then they turned around and became more militant than they originally were. So that's a creation of Israel in large part. I don't know if there's anything else you want to kind of get into, except let me just say, you know, the criticism about the BDS movement, look at all the countries and all the different groups that now are supporting it. You have the labor and national trade union federations in South Africa, UK, Ireland, Norway, Sweden, Spain, Belgium, Brazil. Many of the Latin American countries have all endorsed the BDS principles and its tactics. The Norwegian Federation of Trade Unions has voted for, for not only the economic, but also the cultural and academic boycott of Israel. Canada's largest private sector union with over 300,000 members has adopted the BDS principles. You have academic associations around the world who have voted in favor of the BDS. Many of the American churches, Presbyterian Church, the United Church of Christ, United Methodist, the Quakers, they've all adopted BDS principles as well. So when you have that many different contingencies of the international community looking at this and actually supporting it for the purpose of pressuring Israel on human rights issues and humanitarian needs to the Palestinians, we have to give some credibility to this. We can't just listen solely to what the Christian Zionists just the Israeli government or our government are saying in AIPAC and the other pro-Israel lobbying groups in the United States.
Okay. I appreciate you giving us that insight. What is important is on this radio program, we have never said that one is right, the other is wrong. Instead, it has always been our position that we want to see long-lasting peace in Israel for both the Israelis, the Jewish population, and the Palestinian population. No one from the outside is going to be able to make that happen for them. However, when you realize that the Palestinians are living in the worst possible human conditions, and if this person who comes from South Africa saw the conditions of apartheid in South Africa, then he should be hypersensitive to what went on in South Africa and then spend quality time in the Palestinian territories of Gaza and the West Bank and ask, is this the condition that a person should live in order to feel welcomed and a part of the local community? There's no reason not to have two separate states there, but it has to be done by the people, not by outsiders. So these people are showing their protest against the conditions of the Palestinians. Our goal is to see peace for both. We do not support violence anywhere. Thank you, Richard, for sharing your thoughts.
Okay, you're welcome, Gary.
Again, we take our time to look at everything that anyone's doing. Now we're going to close out our program today by taking a look at what has happened to journalism and how biased it is. And one of the people who I respect is Abby Martin, because Abby could be with any network. She has that it factor. She's intelligent. She is committed to the truth. She is objective. She does not start with an outcome and then try to cherry pick her sources to support it. She lets the outcome be what the resources tell her it should be. So when she says that Rachel Maddow is dangerous to journalism, I think the people on the left and the liberal community should listen to what she has to say and why she's coming to that decision. Now, Jimmy Dore interviewing Rachel Maddow.
Saw them calling Bill Binney a conspiracy theorist. This is the guy who created the Thin Thread program that was taken as the blanket dragnet surveillance program in the Bush administration. James Risen has hailed him. Edward Snowden has hailed him as the person who came before him. So it is enormously offensive to see a 30-year veteran of the NSA be dismissed and cast aside as a conspiracy theorist for simply being the Russia narrative. Like, this guy knows what he's talking about. He built like what you guys are using to spy on everyone right
yes.
now. So it sickens me. And this is on top of just every day, all day, the Joy Reads and the Rachel Maddows. And it's just Russia, Russia, Russia. I don't know how much you can possibly manufacture about Russia, like just piling on and on and on. And the Russia stuff is so insane, too, because when you look at, like, today, for example, RT was forced to register as a foreign agent. They are doing everything in their power to make it just impossible to operate as a network.
Right.
But just to see MSNBC just pile on, it isn't surprising, but it just never ceases to amaze me. I mean, I watch it. I watch CNN and MSNBC and Fox daily just to see how insane they are. But I agree. It is the antithesis of Fox News. I mean, not the antithesis. It's like literally just the other arm.
Yeah.
Because so
they're the propaganda wing of the
Absolutely.
Democratic Party. There's
they
no
are.
Doubt about it. I didn't used to think that, but it definitely is true. Do you think, and I watch Fox News, and every time they attack Trump on Russia, it helps him. If you attack Trump on the real issues, meaning the health care, people's wages, ending the wars, all that stuff, it hurts him.
Well, there you go. We already know the Democratic Party doesn't care about that. Like, that's I just right. got a robocall today from someone who's like, this person is endorsed by the Democrats. I was like, do they support single-payer health care?
Mm-hmm.
And do they support ending militarism? Because if they don't, I don't give up. The Democrats endorse this person.
Do you think that Rachel Maddow is actually gone from being just doing bad journalism to actually being dangerously spreading propaganda?
I think that Rachel Maddow and other people like her know that. It's almost like they're careerists and they're careerist hacks, but they know that they need to keep doubling down on excusing why Democrats are losing support and lost, essentially. I mean, it's all part of the same machine, right? They're all cogs in this big Democratic establishment. So I think people like Hillary, it's still part of that same psychosis that they haven't accepted fault and they don't understand. They're so far removed in their elitist bubbles that they have no idea what the entire country is feeling and thinking. It's really unfortunate. I mean, you just point to the example that Hillary Clinton didn't even bother to go to, like, what was it, Wisconsin?
Wisconsin.
Didn't even bother.
Right.
Did Putin do that? Or did Putin cancel the plane ticket? Or
yes, Putin, he wiped off Wisconsin on her map. He had a guy come in there with an eraser, and she's like, Russia did it.
Russia did it.
Let me ask you, what do you think the future of journalism? Are you optimistic about it? I'm certainly not. But what do you think what do you see it evolving? I mean, it's like in retrospect, honestly, it's always been pretty horrible.
Right.
And I mean, on the big issues like war, right? So what do you think going forward? What is your prognosis for journalism as a whole?
Well, it's difficult because it's journalism is antithetical to business, right? So that's why journalism got corrupted in the first place, is it became just another corporate entity and consolidated into just like a construction of the U.S. government and just essentially stenography from these lackeys in the Beltway. I think that it's dead, and it has been dead for a while because of the corporate consolidation, because of the fact that businesses don't meld well. I mean, we just saw what Gothamist shut down because of the unionization, or attempt to, rather, of the employees. That's why I was at RT, Jimmy. I knew this 10 years ago when the Iraq War was happening. I first thought that it was all the Bush administration. I did a swing state trip for John Kerry. Wow, that was an experience. That was fun. So I was still sucked into the two-party paradigm until I just kind of realized, hey, why is the media selling us this? The media is not just like owned by the Bush administration. So it took me a while, and I think it takes anyone a while to really come to terms with how controlled the entire system is. And it's not just Republicans. It's not just Democrats. But I think that the future of journalism is with us. It's with people declaring objectivity's dead. You know, we don't need Monsanto's press release to compare to the facts of like who's being poisoned by Monsanto. We don't need government officials giving their side of the story. We can talk to the victims themselves. So that, I think, is different and is changing. However, I do think the problem, and I hate to use the term fake news because there's always been fake news, But you're seeing this term now hijacked by the establishment, by the Bill Kristols. They're creating a new think tank now to declare an all-out war on fake news. We know what that's going to mean.
But that means they're going to shut down dissenting voices.
Exactly.
That's what that means, because the biggest fake news that I ever lived through in my life was that Iraq has weapons of mass destruction.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The biggest conspiracy theory I ever heard. So now you have, unfortunately, you have a lot of grifters in capitalism because it's so difficult that now we need to brand ourselves and we need to become a brand to, like, you know, to survive. And we have our Patreons and we have this and that. It's just unfortunate that that's the way it is. I do have a lot of hope with citizen journalism and people's media and the creation and cultivation and support.
And we are working as we speak on with citizen journalists. And we're filled right now. Next week, when the projects are submitted and we have a chance to see people's level of quality of our work, we may ask for more. But I'm very pleased with all the citizen journalists. We have physicians and professors and lawyers, all kinds of people in this audience who want to be citizen journalists, and we've been working with them. So thank you, Jimmy Dore, for interviewing Abby Martin, and more on what has happened to journalism in the two-party system that are so corrupt. But we are the home of a lot of different voices here at the Progressive Radio Network, and we do not exclude people based upon their politics. You're excluded or don't get on the air if you don't have something original and constructive and empowering and true to say. And we have John Whitehead coming on. We have all kinds of remarkable minds joining us in the next month, adding to the people already here. Final thought. Someone called in my office, said, would you just mention you only have a few cans left of the women's stuff. What's in it? Dong Quai, maca root, nettle root, wild yam extract, ashwagandha, flaxseed, soy isoflavones, sweet potato, blueberries, kale, cacao, broccoli, apple, banana, and oat bran, sweetened with stevia, and has a chocolate flavor. I designed it specifically for women and their biochemistry. But they didn't seem to be interested, so we have 30 bottles left. It's normally $113. You're getting it for $29, $29. Call 877-627-5065, 877-627-5065. Thank you all for listening. I look forward to sharing more tomorrow.